with you. How about you? Arabi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
On Wednesday, a number of Italian lawmakers pressured Italy's Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani to finally express words of condemnation for the Israeli regime and Benjamin Netanyahu after 18 months of relentless slaughter in Gaza. Tajani answered questions on Israel's genocidal acts in the Palestine during a question time in the Senate. His words were far from condemnation for Netanyahu's heinous crimes.
Our government's position is clear. Conditions for a political dialogue must be created in order to achieve a two-state solution, but without Hamas. I will reiterate this at tomorrow's EU summit of foreign ministers.
I'm flabbergasted. Once again, you haven't been able to express a single word of condemnation for Israel's onslaught of more than 50,000 people in Gaza, many of whom are children. Gaza is razed to the ground. Minister, you haven't been able to say a single word on the one responsible for this massacre, war criminal Netanyahu.
Italy's support to Israel's genocidal operations in Gaza has been so far unconditional. In January, the Italian government told Israeli officials that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would not be arrested under an ICC warrant were he to visit the country. War criminal Netanyahu is slated to pay an official visit to Hungary this week following an invitation from Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán. Some Italian lawmakers have said Hungary should deny entry to Netanyahu or arrest him if he sets foot in the country.
Netanyahu's visit to Hungary is one of the many legs of the Israeli government's macabre tour of Europe. We deem Netanyahu and his government partners bloodthirsty war criminals, and unfortunately the international community and most Western governments have failed to provide any opposition to Israel at all. We must strongly oppose the Israeli genocide by imposing sanctions on Netanyahu's government, including suspending Israel-EU association agreement.
Former EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs Josep Borrell has often insisted on convening a summit with Israel to discuss violations of human rights obligations under the EU-Israel association agreement. However, Borrell's successor, Kaya Kallas, has so far been much more obliging towards the regime than her predecessor, Max Civili, Rome.
The Gaza Strip is facing a severe humanitarian crisis as Israeli blockade, now exceeding a month, continues to prevent the entry of essential aid, including food, fuel and medical supplies. As Israeli blockade, now exceeding a month, continues to prevent the entry of essential aid, including food, fuel and medical supplies.
The Gaza Strip is going through the most dire circumstances ever. The famine is back again, even more severely as 25 bakeries stop completely. This current crisis is unprecedented as this is the longest time span of closure of the Gazan crossings by the Israeli regime. This in turn has caused the shortage of flour and fuel needed for the bakeries to operate.
The United Nations World Food Programme reported that all bakeries in Gaza have ceased operations due to the acute shortages of flour and fuel. The WFP emphasized that a bread, often the only accessible food for many families, is becoming unattainable, warning that famine is a serious risk looming for the Gazan population.
All the bakeries closed today because of the continuing closure of crossings. All what was stored in our warehouses by the WFP have been consumed completely. So here we are now, without any ingredients there is no way we can work. We used to consume 250 to 300 tons of flour daily, which was less than the actual amount needed for the population. Now there is no choice for us.
The dire humanitarian crisis is further exacerbated by the continuous Israeli military aggression that not only claims the lives of thousands, but also makes survival for 2.2 million Gazans a struggle.
As the blockade endures, the people of Gaza continue to face an increasingly desperate struggle for survival, with starvation looming as a significant threat. Besides the continuous Israeli aggressive attacks, Ghad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
Over 3 weeks of daily U.S. airstrikes across Yemen have failed to achieve their declared goals of ending the Yemeni blockade against Israeli shipments in the Red Sea. When the Trump administration first launched its military operations, they confidently claimed the strikes would just last a few days. But upon entering the war with Yemen, Trump discovered what many had learned before him. Starting a war in Yemen is easy. Escaping its endless trap is where the real fight begins.
These U.S. airstrikes against innocent Yemenis and against Yemen came with the goal to protect and secure Israel and to stop Yemen from its support for Palestine. They have failed to achieve this main task. The biggest proof for this is that Yemen continues to attack Israel and has even expanded its operations targeting Ben Gurion Airport and forcing it to close along with attacking more Israeli sites.
And that's because Yemen is constantly developing and manufacturing more advanced weapons at a record speed. According to military experts in Yemen, this accelerated development is baffling American military planners and reshaping battlefield calculations.
Today, Yemen's armed forces have acquired superior military means across the board, weapons that can hit with more precision and hit at greater distances against U.S. targets. This is changing the balance of power in this war in favor of the Yemeni people and the axis of resistance.
As Washington scrambles for answers, Yemen isn't just withstanding the assault, it's rewriting the rules of the battle.
According to Yemen's defense minister, the armed forces have made significant progress in developing new weapons, which could soon be used to target additional U.S. positions on both land and sea. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Controversial remarks by the Israeli envoy have sparked outrage among the Palestinian solidarity community in Austria. Addressing members of the Jewish community on March 20, Ambassador David Roed is heard saying there should be a death sentence for 16-year-old teenagers in Gaza, and if Europe invests in rebuilding Gaza, Israel will have to destroy it the next time. Palestine solidarity activists launched a petition to the Austrian government calling for the expulsion of the diplomat.
In the video, he called for the death penalty for minors in Gaza and emphasized that Israel will continue to destroy Gaza. So he not only defended Israel's genocidal strategy, but even endorsed it. This is unacceptable for an international representative, and therefore he must be recalled.
The remarks have been heavily condemned by Jewish anti-Zionist activists in Austria who have recently launched the Vienna Jewish Anti-Zionist Declaration to strengthen Jewish pro-Palestinian voices in Europe. They criticized the close relationship between the Austrian Prime Minister Christian Stocker and the Israeli ambassador.
There is obviously a very close contact between Stocker and the Israeli embassy in a time where there is a genocide in Gaza, which is unacceptable for us from the, and we as a Jewish anti-Zionist initiatives, we condemn this strongly, and we will continue to pressure our government to stop all ties with Israel.
Some lawyers and solicitors prepared legal steps in response to the comments made by Roed and those in attendance.
From a legal perspective, it's difficult to do anything because the ambassador is immune. The immunity would have to be lifted to prosecute him, and the government won't do that. The real scandal, however, is that the remarks aren't even being investigated by police.
While there is strong condemnation in the international media, Austrian journalists have been silent about the video.
Activists are outraged over the continued alliance between the genocidal regime in Israel and the Austrian government. In a balanced act of disrespect to the Palestinian community, no Palestinian representatives were invited to the annual iftar hosted in the city hall by the mayor of Vienna last Thursday. While no Palestinian representatives were invited, Israeli representatives attended the event and were seated in the first row. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
Over 3 weeks of daily U.S. airstrikes across Yemen have failed to achieve their declared goals of ending the Yemeni blockade against Israeli shipments in the Red Sea. When the Trump administration first launched its military operations, they confidently claimed the strikes would just last a few days. But upon entering the war with Yemen, Trump discovered what many had learned before him. Starting a war in Yemen is easy. Escaping its endless trap is where the real fight begins.
These U.S. airstrikes against innocent Yemenis and against Yemen came with the goal to protect and secure Israel and to stop Yemen from its support for Palestine. They have failed to achieve this main task. The biggest proof for this is that Yemen continues to attack Israel and has even expanded its operations targeting Ben Gurion Airport and forcing it to close along with attacking more Israeli sites.
And that's because Yemen is constantly developing and manufacturing more advanced weapons at a record speed. According to military experts in Yemen, this accelerated development is baffling American military planners and reshaping battlefield calculations.
Today, Yemen's armed forces have acquired superior military means across the board, weapons that can hit with more precision and hit at greater distances against U.S. targets. This is changing the balance of power in this war in favor of the Yemeni people and the axis of resistance.
As Washington scrambles for answers, Yemen isn't just withstanding the assault, it's rewriting the rules of the battle.
According to Yemen's defense minister, the armed forces have made significant progress in developing new weapons, which could soon be used to target additional U.S. positions on both land and sea. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
A very bleak and somber day in Gaza marking the start of Eid al-Fitr. The scenes here in the central part of the Gaza Strip are not the same and the usual ones. Empty streets, closed shops, and grieving families everywhere. And all that reverberated through is just the echoes of the strikes and artillery shells all around the Strip. Nonetheless, people wore new clothes and adorned their despair-filled streets, holding mere demonstrations of delight and steadfastness, and hoping that their suffering will know a very permanent end.
I hope the war will end, and we will spend the Eid as all other people. I wish to go to swings and play, not to be trapped and suffer like this. I was happy here with this initiative. We had some entertaining activities that brought us happiness. I'll also go to my aunt's home like others.
Despite the endlessly lingering consequences of the Israeli genocide in Gaza and the unbearable trauma people have been subjected to during the last 17 months, the Eid comes at a time of grief and unending trauma. The children here in Deir al-Balah, who are internally displaced from their homes, have finally found out a glimmer of peace and joy to vent their pain, and their hope and resilience have never changed. Abu Bakr Abid, Deir al-Balah, Central Gaza, Occupied Palestine.
The Constitutional Declaration was expected to lay the foundation for a democratic transition that represents all Syrians. Instead, it centralized power in the hands of Jolani, granting him absolute control over government appointments, including ministers, third of the parliament, and a committee that will appoint the rest, while restricting any oversight on his authority.
The declaration contradicts the aspirations of Syrians for democracy, political pluralism, and peaceful power transition. Instead of allowing the people to elect their leaders, it strips them of that right. Even the parliament can neither grant confidence to the government nor hold it accountable.
Critics argue that the declaration lacks true democratic foundations, concentrating authority in a single leader rather than ensuring fair representation for all components of Syrian society. The disappointment appeared in the small number of people celebrating the anniversary of the Syrian revolution, which did not exceed a few hundred.
Unfortunately, the constitutional declaration leans away from democracy, placing excessive power in the hands of the president and excluding genuine participation. Worse, it addresses transitional justice selectively, shifting all blame to one side instead of ensuring accountability for all parties.
Beyond legal concerns, recent events on the Syrian coast have raised serious fears about the country's future. Armed factions linked to the new regime have been accused of grave human rights violations, including mass killings, acts that some experts warn may amount to crimes of genocide.
What happened in the Syrian coastal region raises serious concerns about the future and the potential for further oppression. While I hope for a solution that satisfies all Syrians, the current situation leaves many in fear of what's to come.
As Syrians grapple with a deepening crisis, the constitutional declaration has only added to political discontent and growing fears about the country's future. With power concentrated at the top and violence escalating, hopes for democracy seem more distant than ever. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
Sizdah Badar, uniquely Iranian, brings families outdoors on the 13th day of Farvardin to enjoy picnics, games, and nature. People eat traditional foods, play music, and throw sprouted greens into rivers to ward off bad luck. This year, Iran's cherished Nature Day coincides with Eid al-Fitr, the most significant celebration for Muslims worldwide.
Today is Nature Day, the 13th of the new year. Traditionally, we have come out with the whole family to enjoy our time together. We tell jokes, laugh, and try to let go of the challenges and fatigue we faced throughout the year.
Since today was Nature Day, we thought this music would bring harmony to our gathering with friends. We came out to play music so others could enjoy it too.
Marking a rare and meaningful convergence of traditions, Nowruz, the Persian New Year, began with the holy month of Ramadan, intertwining renewal with devotion. As the month of fasting ended, so did Nowruz, and their dual conclusion gave way to two significant celebrations, Eid al-Fitr and Sizdeh Bedar.
Like other Iranians, we spent Nature Day in nature. We enjoy eating traditional foods like kebab.
This year, Nature Day coincided with Eid al-Fitr, which was very special for us Iranians and Muslims worldwide.
We've come here for Nature's Day with our friends to have some fun with volleyball and frisbee and my friend playing sign for us.
Nature Day in Iran is a joyful celebration of nature, family, and renewal. People reunite outdoors, embracing fresh energy before returning to work. It's a day of fun, remembrance, and appreciation for nature's beauty, filling hearts with joy and spirits with new vitality.
And today marks the conclusion of Nowruz holidays for the Iranian people, a particularly significant Nowruz as it coincided with the ending of the holy month of Ramadan. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is part of the speech delivered on April 26th,
2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in meeting with a number of university students and academic personalities on the 24th day of month of Ramadan. Western colonial policies have not stopped working. That neo-colonial policy is still in place and is working. Their think tanks, as they themselves put it, are thinking. They allocate budgets to this and work on our universities. Therefore, we must be concerned because the challenge is still ongoing. You should compare the influence that our universities exert over the country and its affairs with the influence that 150,000 students in the beginning of the revolution exerted. Well, the former's influence is much more. Therefore, if the enemy can do sabotage work inside universities, its outcomes, harms, and damages will be several times more than the early revolution days. This is because universities are larger and vast. They have a lot of youth in them. They have active speakers, artists, and the like. Therefore, we must be concerned about this. What should we be concerned about? What issue and matter requires that academic officials and you students be concerned about it? In my opinion, the issue is primarily the elimination of ideology and ideals in universities. What we must primarily be concerned and worried about is this. We must think about it. Everyone must do so, including academic managers and activists such as university professors, researchers, you students, and the officials of the country. Today, in many statements that are published in newspapers and in cyberspace, you hear that the issue of destroying ideology is brought up as a necessary task. This is synonymous with the elimination of identity. Ideology is the philosophy, values, and identity of a nation. Today, the qibla of such individuals is the US, and the Americans themselves highlight and rely on American values. American values are an ideology in themselves, but such individuals are not prepared to learn this from the US. When it is said that the elimination of ideology is necessary in the country, this means that the intellectual identity of society, whose important manifestation is universities and students, has to be destroyed. The elimination of identity means this.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring
event.
In Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. The Israeli occupation entity on March 18th resumed intense bombing of Gaza before launching a new ground offensive, ending a nearly two-month ceasefire, a ceasefire that was functional and had proven the best path toward a permanent end to Israel's genocide against the Palestinian people. Yet today, Israel's onslaught has seen a resumption, leaving over 71 people killed since dawn this morning, most of them women and children. In fact, an UNRWA medical facility was targeted in the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza, where of the 20-plus fatalities, nine were children. This as we enter the fourth week of Israel's globally condemned full blockade on all humanitarian aid from entering Gaza. The unending, unceasing, unjustified carnage and genocide against Palestinians in Gaza is a topic of today's Spotlight program. And now for our guests. Joining us, we have Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator at the Samidoun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Beirut. And Mr. John Bosnich, journalist and activist and political analyst, joining us from Fredericton, Canada.
The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Hello, I'd like to welcome you both to our program here, our Spotlight program. Charlotte, we're going to start with you. Your thoughts on how close we were to ending this genocide and how easily the regime, the Israeli regime, has resumed its destruction of Gaza and wholesale slaughter of its women and children.
Obviously, what we've been witnessing in the past several weeks in Gaza is really just crime after crime after crime. And it's especially bitter because of the fact that there has been no aid, there have been no trucks allowed into Gaza for weeks and weeks before the bombing began. So before the bombing began, the Zionist regime had already begun the war of starvation once again against the Palestinian people in Gaza. Just today, bakeries were forced to shut down throughout the strip because there is no flour with which to cook. This is an attempt to use starvation as a weapon of war, which of course we have seen time and time again, not only throughout the past 18 months, but throughout the past 77 years of Zionist genocide. And it really comes as no surprise that the Zionist regime was able to resume their ongoing attacks quickly, especially when they're not just being given carte blanche, but encouragement to and support and, all the support with weapons, money, and political and diplomatic pressure by the United States to continue that assault, where you have the U.S. president essentially threatening the Palestinian people with ongoing ethnic cleansing and ongoing genocide as one of his first actions after attempting to run as a candidate who allegedly didn't want war. So what we're seeing, though, is the behavior that the Zionist regime has followed time and time again every time they agree to a ceasefire, which is that they say they're going to agree to a ceasefire, but then they don't do it, and they continue to attack, to bomb, to starve, to kill, to assassinate, and to massacre. And so we're seeing this taking place in Gaza right now, but we've seen it in the past in Gaza, we're seeing it in Lebanon, we're seeing it across the board. And this is just the continuation. The Zionist regime and its competing politicians, no matter how deep its own social crisis is growing, the one thing that brings these forces together is their commitment to waging war against the Palestinian people, because the entire project is built on the theft and confiscation of Palestinian land and the dispossession of the Palestinian people.
Thank you there, Charlotte. And John, thank you for your patience. Welcome to the program. John Bosnich out of Fredericton in Canada there. John, this week we've seen the lifeless, bloodied bodies of children wearing their celebratory Eid al-Fitr clothes in the hands of their parents, their grieving parents. We saw the occupation kill 9 children today out of 20 people it killed in an UNRWA medical facility in the Jabalia refugee camp. We saw one of those fathers of one of those kids holding up the headless torso of his child, saying how, what, why, trying to make sense of why this genocide is this protracted, targeting who it is targeting, and how barbaric this campaign is against Gaza's women and children. It makes sense to no one, John. Your initial thoughts, please.
Well, it makes sense to the Israeli regime, because the Israeli regime is trying to prove that it is invincible. And since they're unwilling and unable to fight man-to-man in a military conflict, what they've decided to do is use American weapons paid for by American taxpayers to massacre and, in effect, slaughter women and children across Gaza. And if this is Netanyahu's idea of showing how strong the Israeli armed forces are, how the so-called Israeli Defense Force is, then he's going to probably learn a new lesson if he launches a ground war against able-bodied men and young boys who can handle a rifle and defend themselves man to man. I think that this is a terror campaign. This is not not merely a remote bombing, not merely a starve them to death attempt, but it is a terror war. We've had terror attacks before, but this is the world's first terror war run by the state of Israel.
And thank you there, John. And Charlotte, today we have Benjamin Netanyahu, who's a war cabinet, or for a better word, it's a genocide cabinet, in this campaign, saying that the ground operation that they're embarking upon is to enlarge the so-called buffer zone in Gaza. And then you have just a few days before that saying he wants to enforce Donald Trump's complete dispossession of Gaza for over 2.4 million Palestinians. These contradictory statements, the only thing, and they leave us with not even knowing what Israel's strategy for Gaza truly is outside of pure annihilation.
Well, when they say buffer zone, let's just be clear about what the term buffer zone actually means. This means stealing Palestinian land, displacing and ethnically cleansing its population, and imposing Zionist military bases there. So it's a buffer zone is merely a mechanism for the ethnic cleansing, for the genocide of Palestine and of the Palestinian people. And it's important to note when we're speaking about Gaza that over 70% of Palestinians in Gaza are themselves Palestinian refugees who were displaced from their homes and lands within occupied Palestine in 1947 and 1948 by Zionist militias. So these are Palestinians who have a right to return to their original homes and lands, which were stolen from them over 70 years ago by the Zionist regime. And they are not only being denied that right to return, but they have been forced through Nakba after Nakba in the past 18 months of more displacement, of more ethnic cleansing, and fundamentally, the Zionist regime has always had the goal of stealing more land and having fewer Palestinians, fewer Arabs. And we're seeing the same thing happening in Gaza now that has always been the Zionist strategy, now being given carte blanche by the United States and by its imperialist allies in Europe to continue these war crimes and crimes against against humanity with absolute impunity because there's no meaningful action to bring it to an end. So this only encourages the Zionists to go further and further in their pursuit of annihilation. No, they don't have a military strategy, and they certainly don't have a strategy to defeat the resistance. What they do have a strategy for is the mass killing and targeting of schools, residential homes, tents and refugee camps, mosques and churches, and hospitals.
And John, to add to these trivial pretexts and strategies by the occupation, just moments ago, Benjamin Netanyahu says that the military, and this is a direct quote, is dissecting Gaza and seizing territory to retrieve hostages held in the Palestinian territory. The military is dissecting the Gaza Strip and increasing the pressure step by step so that Hamas will return our hostages. My question to you, you just had a ceasefire, the January 19th ceasefire, that was allowing you to see your captives come home without killing and maiming, you know, thousands of people in the process. Why did you allow that to go belly up when it was functioning just fine?
Because peace is not the objective of Netanyahu. This is, when normal, rational people around the world watch this news broadcast that you're emitting today, they're sitting in their homes and wondering, why would anybody do this? And they try to reason the situation out rationally. That doesn't work. That's what people have to understand. This is not a rational process. Mass murder, genocide, land grabs against the United Nations, against the international community, this is not a legal or acceptable route to take. What Netanyahu knows is that before this crisis, he was going to be voted out of office by his own people. He now is living on borrowed time. The borrowed time is gained by extending the war and by killing Palestinians and pretending that he's doing it in Israel's interest. What he's doing is acting above the law, acting over the law and despite the law, and acting beyond the law, outside of the law, about genocide and starving of populations to death. In effect, Benjamin Netanyahu has turned the entire state of Israel into an outlaw state, not just in the eyes of those who oppose Zionism, but in the eyes of all civilized persons around the world. This is what he has done. He has made his entire state into an outlaw state. And now the entire state of Israel is going to have to face justice from the entire world.
Thank you there, John. And Charlotte, last week we saw the occupation kill over 15 Red Crescent Society rescue workers, paramedics, along with one UN staff member. They actually buried them all in a mass grave along with their ambulances that were trying to cover up the war crime. And it was ultimately recovered, uncovered, and they were exhumed. Could you imagine, Charlotte, if this would have happened in Russia or Ukraine, somewhere in Africa or the Baltics, the kind of global backlash and uniform condemnation it would have received?
Yes, well, I mean, what we're seeing in this attack on paramedics, the attack on civil defense workers, the attack on UN staff, just today there was an assault on an UNRWA facility in which 19 people, including 9 children, were martyred. At least those were the numbers earlier today from that attack. The Zionist regime has consistently targeted medical staff, health workers, doctors, and hospitals. It has consistently targeted civil defense workers and security forces, and it has consistently targeted UN facilities. The one thing that makes these incidents stand out is, especially when they are all Palestinian staff, as in this case, the Zionist regime doesn't even feel like it has to claim that there was a mistake or that there was some kind of incorrect intelligence. They simply feel justified in continuing these kinds of attacks as a matter of policy. And this is the mechanism of genocide. It's the killing itself, but it's also the prevention of the people from having access to health workers, to having access access to civil defense workers that allow the society and people to continue to function and to heal in the face of this onslaught and in the face of this aggression. And so this has been a systematic policy of the Zionist regime throughout this 18 months and really throughout the past 77 years of Zionist occupation and genocide. And you're absolutely right that if this happened in a country that was a target of U.S. imperialism or that was a target of its European allies, we would be hearing endless condemnations. But because it is happening with the weapons and money that is given to it by the to the Zionist regime by the United States, paid for by the population of the United States, then we are hearing nothing about it, just as we saw the U.S. exercise veto after veto in the Security Council for years on end in order to protect the Zionist regime as it carries out war crimes and crimes against humanity.
Mm. Thank you. And John, let's get to the deprivation of aid in Gaza. We're going over 3 weeks now that Israel's not allowing any aid to get into the hands of Palestinians in Gaza. Multiple sources, journalists, civilians, aid organizations, different UN bodies, different rights bodies are all saying famine is imminent in Gaza, that there is no flour for bread in many areas of the besieged strip. And the Benjamin Netanyahu's government says that that is a lie. Like every other war crime the regime has been accused of, it is a lie. And we, in fact, he said, ourselves have delivered flour to Gaza for the civilian population. Are you buying it?
I'm not buying it, and I don't think they're delivering it. And I think that even if they do deliver some token deliveries in certain areas where they have control or where they have military access, there's no method for the distribution of those supplies to the population. This is a cover-up, and I'm very sorry to have to say that it looks very much as if Donald J. Trump, the President of the United States, has been bought and paid for by Miriam Adelson, his main Zionist supporter in the United States, who appears to have bought the President of the United States, because everybody knows what's going on. And even though the lying mainstream media in the United States is largely not covering this genocide and largely not covering the situation on the ground because they're afraid of getting killed by their own bombs, the fact is that President Trump is going to have to decide right now whether he puts law and justice before Israel or not. And he also has to decide whether he puts the United States before Israel. Because if he ties the United States to Israel on this matter, then he will be charged along with Netanyahu for every crime that is being committed here. And that will mean the entire breakdown of the global system of international justice. If that's what they want, unfortunately, they'll get it. And if that happens, then Israel will be the target of every opponent of the Zionist regime in the entire region. And that will be very counterproductive for all those dollars spent to buy Donald Trump.
And Charlie, can you weigh in as well, please, if you could, on the utilization and weaponization of aid as a tool of war. Everyone has condemned the use of food and starvation as a weapon of war by the Israelis, especially by Netanyahu and his former genocide minister, Yoav Gallant. The ICC, you very well know, has issued arrest warrants for both of them for crimes against humanity and for using starvation as a weapon of war. And we've seen time and again Netanyahu say that no. In fact, I allow Gaza's population to receive 2,000 to 3,000 calories per person per day. And I just want to ask you, one, that's never been confirmed by anyone, to John's point, that is taking place. Two, how preposterous is it to hear an occupier even make that kind of declaration, that how much he feels he should allow an occupied population to receive in calories daily? I mean, would you even hear someone allow themselves to make that kind of judgment, that kind of call, that kind of declaration? It blows your mind, doesn't it?
If this question is for me,
it fundamentally undermines the fascist and murderous nature of the Zionist regime. And it should be appalling and really just create a human reaction of anger when people hear about this counting of calories. But first and foremost, the Zionist regime is lying. They have openly declared time and time again that they are blocking trucks from entering, that these are the trucks that were allowed to enter under the ceasefire agreement, and that they blocked these trucks from entering weeks before they began the actual bombing. There are Palestinians in Gaza who are suffering on a daily basis. Bakeries are unable to open. And another thing that the Zionist regime is doing with this policy is it is attempting to cause social chaos and strife within Gaza. One of the things that has allowed the Palestinian people to remain steadfast throughout this 18 months of just unmitigated aggression and torture and massacres and genocide is the strength of the Palestinian internal front and their commitment to continuing to struggle and to never give in to the occupier. And what the occupation is doing now, hand in hand with collaborators and agents, is attempting to undermine this social fabric and create chaos through inducing starvation, through inducing desperation, through inducing circumstances that drive people's frustration with one another. The occupation has been collaborating with criminal gangs in order to extort high prices on the goods that are available, on the very limited goods that are available in the market. The occupation has promoted the theft of aid and its trafficking. The occupation has basically done everything possible in order to make the delivery of aid something that is painful for Palestinians. What we've seen is massacre after massacre of Palestinians lining up at a bakery or waiting for flour. What we have also seen has been targeted assassinations time and time again of civil defense workers, of internal security workers, and also of Palestinians that are carrying out the transfer and distribution of aid to the population. All of this is part of the comprehensive genocidal assault that is meant to undermine the Palestinian social fabric by attacking those who are responsible for the fair and equal distribution of aid among the citizenry and among the population in this context of a war of starvation and genocide. So, you know, the fact is that Netanyahu and his officials, you know, really speak out of both sides of their mouth. When they carry out these denials from time to time, it's very strange. Because the rest of the time when they're speaking in Hebrew to the Zionist population, they spend that time going on and on about how they're going to kick all the Palestinians out, about how they're human animals, and about how they're going to carry out a campaign of genocide and destruction.
And they put that same question. It seems like, John, you wanted to answer that. Can we imagine any scenario, John, where this is acceptable? Why is Netanyahu, or anyone in Israeli leadership for that matter, counting Gaza's calories, for Christ's sake? John, I mean, can resistance make weapons with calories or with food? Help us make this sense of this.
Oh, well, I have to echo the words of your other guest today, that the last time I ever heard of anybody measuring the calories received by the inmates in what they've turned into a concentration camp in Gaza is when Adolf Hitler's SS decided how many calories the Jews could get in his death camps and in his ghettos. And that is what has happened here. Netanyahu has become the nemesis of the Israeli people, of the Jewish people, using the same tactics as Nazi Germany. And I want to also mention about so-called hostages. Whatever number of hostages might be being held by Hamas, they are 1 to 1,000 compared to the number of people incarcerated without due cause in Israeli prisons from among the Palestinian population, and yet nobody ever calls them hostages, which is what they are.
And before we go, Kate, there's an American, a Trump-backed Florida State Senator, Randy Fine, has just won a special election for the U.S. House seat out of Florida, his latest comment that he made about Palestinians in Gaza, he said they can eat, where is it right here? They can eat, let them eat rockets. There are plenty of those. Stop the trucks. Gaza must be destroyed. May the streets of Gaza overflow with blood. Anyone who gives numbers of Palestinian deaths supports terrorism. This is a person in the U.S. Senate, and a lot of people ask, how's the U.S. sitting back and letting this happen? And I often tell them they aren't. They're guaranteeing that it happens.
Well, the election of Randy Fine is just another absolute stain on the United States, which comes as no surprise. I mean, that he's just saying out loud what has been U.S. policy now explicitly under Trump, but implicitly under Biden, which is providing the Zionist regime with billions and billions and billions of dollars in deadly weaponry. But it is time for people in the United States to do what is necessary to hold these genocidaires accountable legally, politically, and by all means, in order to ensure that this kind of incitement to genocide is a war crime. Incitement to genocide is a violation of the Genocide Convention, and it is long past time that U.S. Zionists and their fellow war criminals are held accountable meaningfully without this excuse of ignoring the ICC, ignoring the ICJ, attempting to impose sanctions on the International Criminal Court for seeking to hold them accountable. It's long since past time that Fein, Trump, Biden, and the entire and all of these war criminals, Hegseth, are all held accountable, because what they are doing is absolutely, it is war crimes, it is crimes against humanity, and it is genocide. And people in this world will ensure that they are held accountable.
All right, time has gotten the better of us. Thank you both for showing up and enjoying us with your input on this program, our spotlight today. Charlotte Cates, their international coordinator at the Sami Doun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, joining us from Beirut, and Mr. John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst, joining us from Fredericton, Canada. And thanks for tuning in. This brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Stay safe and bye-bye for now.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.